Okay, there's not very many of us, but I'm sure once they find out what we're doing here, there'll be more tomorrow. But anyway, we'd like to get started. It's 4 o'clock, and I like to start on time so we can have as much time as possible. I'd like to talk with you a little bit about our speaker. It's Dr. Faith Ann Laughlin. She's a professor at Southern Adventist University in the School of Education and Psychology. She's got down here her teaching philosophy. Teaching philosophy in a nutshell is the way she calls it. She says, as a Seventh-day Adventist Christian educator, I aim to educate students not merely for life after graduation, but also for eternity through an integration of faith and learning. This education occurs through the use of diverse methods, incorporating various learning styles, presentation styles, learning activities, collaborative projects, modeling scenarios, case studies, technology usage, and questions and answer sessions. In this endeavor, she says, I frequently remind myself that our lives must center on Christ momently if we truly desire to integrate faith and learning. She has been a teacher since 1982. She says she includes 8 years as missionary work in the public school system. She's been at Southern Adventist University. This is the beginning of her eighth year. She has one husband, one son, and one daughter. So she likes to do things once, it looks like. Her motto is God first, family next, career in all the other times and pockets. And I'd like for all of us to welcome Dr. Laughlin.
My bad. Okay, we'll try to remember this. All right, Dr. Faith Ann Laughlin, Dr. Laughlin, I answer to a lot of names, Mama Faith, all kinds of things. The teens in my church call me Mama Faith, but that's a whole nother story. So you'll notice that the last name is spelled like laugh, but it's not pronounced laugh, it's pronounced laugh. It rhymes with cough, so you think of me in either laugh or cough, depending on the day. I tell that to students, and then usually they remember how to spell my name and how to pronounce my name. So that's the whole goal here. Sorry about that. Go away, Facebook. All right, so something is interfering here. There, that's better. All right, contact information is up there on the screen, and you'll have other opportunities to get that if you would like to keep in touch. There's also going to be a Google Drive folder in which I will put all of the presentations, all of the PowerPoints, all of the magazine articles that we talk about or refer to, so that you can go back to it at any time and find it there. Now, the book that this presentation this whole week is based on is from Donna Habenicht. It's called 10 Christian Values That Every Kid Should Know. And it was originally published in the year 2000. You can do the math, it's been a while, but values are still something that I think we need to concentrate on. I checked with the ABC, it's out of print, but they have two copies. So the first two people, no, I'm kidding. Amazon.com also has about 14 copies that range in price from $1.63, these are used obviously, plus shipping, to $29.99. And I'm pretty sure that my friend Dr. Donna is not getting any of the $29.99. I think when the book originally came out, it was about $12 or $15. But you can still find it in some places. It's called, again, 10 Christian Values That Every Kid Should Know. And that was the starting point for this. I spoke with my friend Donna Habeneck before I put the presentation together, and I said, before I go to the work of making this into a presentation, I just want to know, do I have your permission? So yes, I have her permission. And since the book is out of print anyway, we have synthesized or summarized a lot of what is in the book into these PowerPoints. So if I go too fast or you miss something along the way, don't worry. You can still access it later. And it's a good idea to review things anyway. So, Psalms 1, verse 3. He will be like a what? A tree. Psalms 1, verse 3. He will be like a tree firmly planted by streams of water, which yields its fruit in its season, and its leaf does not wither, and in whatever he does, he prospers. Now, how many of you are educators? Okay. How many of you are parents? Okay. Just so you know, parents are educators too. They just don't get paid for it. Some of us in Adventist education would say we get a living wage, but you know, we're not vacationing on the Riviera either. That being said, I've been able to do a lot of traveling with my Adventist education. It's really great. So this is what we're going to be doing this week. The first week today is called Values. Where do I begin? Think about the world that we live in. North America, here in this conference, you have a lot of very rural areas. You also have some cities. Do the youth of today need values? Okay, what about the youth that are in our homes? We do our best to teach values as parents. And it was very interesting to me because I handed the book that this came from to my daughter, who just finished at Southern with an English major. She wants to be a writer herself someday. And I handed this book to her, and I said, I want you to outline this book. She said, okay, Mom. And she started outlining, and it took her hours and hours and hours. And as she was outlining, I was thinking, wow, what a great way to make her read the book. That was good. But I was thinking about all the times growing up when I didn't do what was in the book. And I had the information. And I said, where was my mind? She's 22 now. And I said, you know, Katie, I'm sorry I didn't do more of what was in the book. She says, Mom, what are you talking about? As I was reading the book to summarize it, I kept thinking of this and this and this and this. And I said, oh, okay, makes me feel better. But we have to begin somewhere, yes? We have to begin somewhere. We have to make a beginning. So the values tree is found in chapter 1. And we're going to look at chapters 1, 2, and 10 today. There are 10 Christian values here. We're only going to talk about five of them, one each day. We're going to talk about some of the other things that lead up to them before we talk about the values themselves. We're going to do some how-to things about how to teach the values. So the values tree, values begin with God and faith in God, because that's the number one value, in my opinion, that we need to share with our children. Whether they are students in our classrooms, or whether they are children in our homes, or maybe grandchildren that visit once in a while, or random neighbor kids that float through and grab a cookie. I call them all my kids. The ones that weren't born to me, I tease them and tell them that they are my sort of sons. So the values tree has God at the top, and then it says, live the values, teach the values, protect your child's mind, make right and wrong very clear, develop self-respect and confidence, Give lots of practice in making decisions. Show your child how to deal with peer pressure and make God real. So that's the values tree. Growing a child is a lot like growing a tree. So what does it take to grow a healthy tree? Any gardeners in here? Tree people? Okay. What does it take to grow a healthy tree? Water, sun, air, soil. I'm sorry? Patience. Yes. Yes. And a seed. You have to have the seed to begin with. Okay. So you have to have good genetic stock. Yes? Good genetic stock to start out with. Now, what happens? Some of you are saying, but wait, I work with children that come from some homes that where their environment and it's really tough. Yes, it can be. Some children are predisposed to certain things like compassion and resistance to peer pressure based on their genetics. Some have an organizational gene. Have you ever met this child? This is the child that has a place in their desk for everything. They know exactly where it is. They can find it. It's not buried under last week's sandwich and 6 months of homework. Okay? They have an organizational gene. Maybe they have a bent toward a skill or academics. I have a friend who just graduated with his music major. In his senior year of academy, his music teacher said to him, to think about being a music major. He said, I never thought about being a music major. I'll look into it. He came down to Southern, became a music major, and just finished. He's been doing solos for 2 years now. If that teacher hadn't have said that, his senior year, it wasn't like he was, you know, the three-year-old with the violin that's grown up with music all his life. So sometimes a child has a skill or a bent toward a certain academic line, and practice is necessary, yes, but if somebody already is leaning in that direction, that's a good start. So what do you do when you have students that aren't leaning in that direction? Louder? Yeah. You start with where they are. The good genetic stock, the bad genetic stock, whatever genetic stock the child comes from, you can't change that. And a lot of times you can't change the environment unless they happen to live in your house. Okay? But you can start from where they are and move on. You need the best soil for that tree. Okay. There are temperaments that I'm going to talk about just now. How many of you are familiar with Winnie the Pooh? Any Winnie the Pooh people in here? Okay, just saying. I don't know where you are in your stage of life. I discovered this many years ago. But when you talk about temperaments, if your temperament is the same as your child's temperament, you can communicate. It's a blessing. Sometimes you butt heads. But for the most part, it's a blessing because you know how you understand where they're coming from. But sometimes you get a child that is not like you in temperament. And if you use the same words with that child, it's not going to go very far. So I want you to think about the temperaments as what we call in scientific research a Johari's window. It's a simple X like this, a plus sign, okay? Like my little box here. So there are people that are focused on things and tasks. I ran into one today in the ABC. I said, excuse me, could you help me? No. He was focused on a task, and he needed to get that task done. I'll send somebody to help you just a minute. You know, and he's off and running, okay? Some people are really focused on the task, okay? And And some people are more people person. Hi, how are you? You know, oh, really? You have grandkids too, huh? I don't have any. At least not biological ones yet. Some are focused on people. Some are focused on tasks or things. And then there are some that are extroverts and some that are introverts. Okay? So, Winnie the Pooh. I can't use the pictures because I'd get in trouble with copyright. So you have to think of it in your head. Okay. So there's a Pooh character that is very things-oriented, task-based, and outgoing. Do you know who he is? Rabbit. If you've watched Winnie the Pooh at all, Rabbit has to have his garden in just this order. He has straight rows. You plant it on this day. You harvest it on this day. It doesn't matter what is happening around you. This you must do. You have to do it just this way. It doesn't matter if Eeyore has lost his tail and everybody has to go look for it. No, it's time to harvest the garden, and you've got to do it. And you will meet some of those. Some of them have been in your classrooms. In secondary school, when I taught at the high school level, I assigned a paper in ninth grade English. You know how much ninth graders love to write papers? Yeah, okay. And this girl came up to me afterwards, and she said, "Did you want that double-spaced size 12 font? And if I turn it in a week early, could you review it and make sure it's okay so that I can correct it if I need to before the due date?" And I thought to myself, she's a rabbit. She is so rabbit-like. Okay? And then there are extroverts that are just very people person. You know, they will walk up to somebody in the dining hall that they do not know. "Hi, I see you're sitting by yourself. Are you waiting for somebody, or can I sit down here? And by the way, this is my name, and where are you from, and what's your name, and what's your story?" You ever met anybody like that? Maybe some of you resemble that remark. Okay, so which Winnie the Pooh character is very people-oriented, not really into the whole tasks? Tigger! Yeah, he's bouncing all over the place, you know, can't sit still. There's a reason this mic isn't on a stand. Okay, so Tigger, yes, very much people. And then there are people that are more introverted. They love people. They want to make sure that everybody gets along. They want their friends to have friends and have a good experience. And they're very helpful, they're very into people, but you're not going to see them up in front with the microphone. They would be more likely to be the person setting up for their friend who has the microphone. Does that make sense? And that character is Winnie the Pooh, and a little bit of Piglet, too. Pooh and Piglet are kind of very similar like that. And then there is an introvert that is very much task-oriented. And you know who that is? It's Eeyore. When we first broke the news to my husband that he was an Eeyore, he thought we were dissing him. "What? Eeyore? Really?" We said, "Well, you're a little bit rabbit too. You've got Eeyore and rabbit going on there." And we said, "It's not good or bad. It just is." Is it okay to be an introvert? Yes. But if you're a Tigger and you are trying to train your children in the home, your children at school, and by the way, when I say children, they can be of any age, because my father-in-law, he's a retired truck driver. He's 84 now. He finally retired a year or two back. When he was 75 and on unemployment, he would go in and turn in applications, and people would look at him like, "What?" But he still works. He now runs he has a portable sawmill that he plays with, and he also works at Shenandoah Valley Academy, volunteers as one of the labor people that helps the students work in the box factory. But anyway, if you see Grandpa EJ, you say, "Hey, Grandpa, how you doing?" Not bad for a kid. So I figure that if he's 84 and he's a kid, that children, whether they are in elementary school, middle school, or high school, can still be called children. And I tell them this right up front so that they know where I'm coming from. So if you are a Tigger and you are talking to an Eeyore, you can't use the same language, you can't use the same tactics that you use with another Tigger. Does that make sense? This means yes, this means no. This means you need to stay after class. Okay, I do that to my college kids all the time because they're very fond of just sitting there and looking at me blankly. And there aren't any in this room, so I can't get busted by them. So what am I saying with all of these stories? What is the sum, what is the germ, the whole point of all of these stories about temperaments and these silly cartoon characters? Don't tell me. I want you to turn to somebody near you and tell them. And I'm going to need you to find a buddy. If you're sitting by yourself, it's no fair telling yourself. You got to tell somebody else. What's the point? So get together. Okay, so give me a couple of answers there on that. After you've had a chance to talk a little bit with your friend, you can give me your answer or you can steal theirs. It's okay to do that. Yes, okay, good. You have to teach to where they are and to who they are. Yes? Yes, and they learn in different ways. And isn't it amazing how many of you who are parents have more than one child? Okay, did you think when you got the first one, oh, now I've got it down, I've raised this one, she's 5 years old, wonderful, now I know what to do with the next one. Surprise! Yes, what works for one child doesn't necessarily work for the other one, so you're going to have to change what works. So I have a question. I don't know, maybe we should make him leave the room first. Because someday I might need a job and he might not want to hire me after I say this. So why do we give one size fits all assignments in school? And it takes Johnny 3 hours to read the chapter that it takes Susie 20 minutes to read. And then we have everybody write the same essay. And Susie is really good at reading, but she's horrible at writing. And so she gets down 6 sentences and thinks she's done. I know a boy. Some of my illustrations are girls, but this one's a boy. I know a boy, he went with his parents when he was in 5th grade. He went on a cruise to Alaska. His teacher was way cool. He sent a journal with the boy and said, write about your trip, put pictures in the journal, and tell me what you learned on this trip. And I'll excuse all of the homework that you miss. Yeah, good teacher, eh? I mean, math, really, math, it comes back around. If you don't learn it now, it'll come back around. It circles. So this boy wrote 3 sentences. And since he happens to be biologically related to me, I looked at the 3 sentences and I said, we stopped at Ketchikan. Can you tell me more about that? Yeah, we saw this really cool logging show, and this guy made a carving with a chainsaw, and we saw this other guy who was a log roller up on top of a log in a big tub of water and he was moving the log. Oh, I said, why didn't you write that down? Oh, Mom, it takes too long. Okay? But if you ask the same kid, he can discuss with you stuff that's up here. But if you ask him to write it, there's a block in his brain. Some people would call it laziness. I happen to think he has symptoms of dysgraphia, and it's hard to get this out through a pen. Okay? Why not pair up students and let the very verbal child work with the introvert, and the verbal child can then take the report and do the oral report, and the introvert can take the same thing and turn it into a written assignment. Okay, just saying. Anyway, so different strokes for different folks. Don't treat every kid the same. One size does not fit all. Okay, so water. We need water to grow good trees. And that's teaching from God's word. Now, can you teach math from God's word? Can you teach math from God's word? Yeah. Okay. Are there any principles in mathematics that are also principles in life? Can you connect those? Well, you would if you were a student in my friend's class at Southern, because he makes them do that. For every math objective, he also has a spiritual lesson connection that they have to write. But teaching from God's word. We also need that. We need to have special teaching experiences for each one. Fertilizer, we're going to call this. You like my dog? This is a very strange dog. He's part beagle, part dachshund, and we think the other part is Basenji because his tail curls. But he has the length of a dachshund and the height of a beagle. And I kid you not, this dog, if you have a handicapped doorknob with the lever, he can open it. He jumps up until his feet hit it, and then he pushes through. If you have a regular doorknob, he puts one foot on each side, and as he jumps up, he tries to turn it, but he doesn't have opposable thumbs, so he doesn't quite get it, unless it isn't latched, and then he's able to get in. He can jump from a standing position this high. Have you ever tried to train a puppy? The thing is, you have to catch them in the act of doing something that you don't want them to do in order to teach them that that's not what you want them to do. Okay? There are some similarities. I'm not calling the children dogs, but there are some similarities with children. If you catch them doing something, how much good does it do to say, write your spelling words 6 times each? And then you watch them and they put S, 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 C, 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 C. Know what I'm saying? Okay. So if you catch them in the act of spelling a word wrong, oh, my son used to hate this because he not only had to deal with the teacher at school, he had to deal with his mama. And I would go through his homework and say, underline every word you think you spelled wrong. And then I would write those words in the margin of his spelling book. When you do your spelling test this week, I want you to know your spelling words plus these words. He did not like that. But if you teach them to spell correctly the words that they're misspelling in their own work, when they make the mistake, somehow it's like teaching a puppy. You've got to do just-in-time teaching, something that applies to their life. Sometimes you need a little bit of discipline, a little pruning here and there of the tree. What is the root word of discipline? Disciple. It's the same root word. Greek, if I'm not mistaken. This picture of the man, he's not really sitting in the tree branch, but you see him playing the banjo. That was my teacher. He was my teacher from first grade through fourth grade. We had a one-room school. The stories I could tell you. He was also the only teacher to ever give me a spanking. But he was my favorite teacher. And the reason that he gave me the spanking was because I was in third grade and I started a fight with a first grader over the line at the drinking fountain. I deserved it. But my point being, we can discipline without being harsh and in a way that still keeps the relationship between the adult and the child on a good footing. So a little discipline is important. Okay, and then some sunshine. Sunshine. There was a teacher who was in a little town in northern Michigan, and he had a student that was incorrigible. That's a big word. What does incorrigible mean? Can't correct. Incorrectible. That's not a word, but incorrigible is. And this student was driving the teacher crazy because every time he went to do something in the classroom, this student would say, "That's not the way we do it here at this school. Here at this school, this is how we do that." I mean, teachers, really? How would you like that child smarting off? And to make matters worse, the child, you give the child work to do, and you turn around, it felt like, and 5 minutes later, the child has no work to do because it's done. Sunshine and warmth. That teacher made sure that that child did not come to school the next year because that child was such a burden and so difficult and not responsive to him. So fast forward a year, teacher moves on, new teacher. Old teacher gets to talk to new teacher at camp meeting. Old teacher says, "I would like to shake the hand of the man that can survive until Christmas with that child. Such an incorrigible child." And that young new teacher, who had less than 10 years of experience, decided at that camp meeting that he didn't care what happened, he was going to love that child. Sight unseen! And so he did. He and his wife proceeded to love that child, even though that child was impulsive and sometimes spoke before she thought. That child was opinionated and from a disadvantaged background. You know, her mom is on welfare. You know the kind. Okay. But that teacher came in and loved. How many people love eighth graders? I mean, let's get real. Eighth grade? Really? You know, I love eighth graders because I taught eighth grade in East Los Angeles. I love eighth graders. They're so much fun. But this teacher decided before he even met the child in question that he was going to love her. And he and his wife did exactly that. And I'm here today because of it. When I went away to academy, his wife sewed by hand a long, we didn't call them prom dresses because we were Adventists. They were banquet dresses. She sewed a banquet dress for every banquet for 3 years. The 9 or 10 dresses, I don't remember how many banquets that was. And it would just show up. I would be clueless. "Oh, there's a banquet next week? Okay." And then in the mail, here would come a dress. Sunshine and warmth, even when the child is incorrigible. Okay, protection from storms. Parental protection or teacher protection of that tree that you're nurturing. The story is told by Corrie Ten Boom. Some of you may have heard of it before. Corrie was going with her father on a train trip, and he was carrying a suitcase, a little valise. And she said, "I want to help. I want to carry that for you." And he said, "Okay, pick it up." So she went to pick it up. And he came along, and he put his hand over top of hers, and together they picked it up. And he said, "Child, there are some things that are too difficult for you to carry right now, and that's what I'm for. That's what your father is for. There are some children out there in your classrooms. There are some children possibly in your homes or in the neighborhood where your children play that don't have anybody to carry that suitcase for them. They don't have anybody that can teach them the values that they need to know to grow straight as an arrow." So know your trees. Trees are beautiful, but they're not all the same. Know your students. Values provide a basis for all decisions and actions during life. Values provide a sense of purpose. Values direct the means and ends of actions. They're standards of conduct. They're qualities of the soul. If you teach the values to the children, then the children, hopefully, internalize the values. We'll talk about that later on. And then they are less likely to do it just because you said so, and more likely to do it because it is a value that they have adopted. Why am I kind to that person in church who is struggling to get up the aisle? They have two canes, one in each hand, a Bible under their arm, and a purse on the other elbow. And as a 12-year-old kid, I'm hurrying to sit down because if I don't, I know that I'm going to get in trouble. Do I stop and help that person because it's part of who I am? Values, qualities of the soul. Without sound beliefs and values, children do not know what they believe or who they are, and their self-image suffers. Not only does their self-image suffer, but it becomes easier for other peers to tell them what they should believe and what they should do. Okay, more than personal preferences. Values can be expressed by how we spend our money. Funny story. At least I think it's funny. They asked me to call for the offering at my church a couple weeks ago. It's dangerous giving me a microphone. You never know what's going to come out. And I said, pulled a $1 bill out of my pocket and a $5 bill out of my pocket, and I said, "What is this $1 bill going to buy me if I go over town? 99-cent taco on taco night? Taco Tuesday?" I said, "Okay. What's this $5 bill going to buy me?" The pastor says, "Five tacos." I said, "We know where your mind is, Pastor. Remember that when you're preaching today." Okay. And then I said, "Okay, what if the $1 bill could talk to the $5 bill?" So the $5 bill says, "Where have you been lately?" The $1 bill says, "I've been to the Methodist Church, the Baptist Church, the Adventist Church. I've been to Children's Story each week." "And where's the $5 bill been?" "Well, I tried to get into Starbucks, but they told me I was too little." We have no trouble dropping a $5 bill for a beverage. Okay, I don't drink coffee. We'll leave that right there on the table. But Starbucks, has hot chocolate and hot cider too. Okay, just saying. Why is a $1 bill so much money when we put it in the offering plate, but so little money when we go to rent a movie? Just saying. Our values can be expressed by how we spend money, how we spend our time, how they can be expressed by choosing sex or remaining a virgin until marriage. The strength of values determines the level of difficulty of the decision. If you've already decided something, then that decision is stronger than the decision that you make on the spur of the moment. My daughter was 5 years old. She came home from kindergarten one day, and she says, "Daddy, where do chicken nuggets come from? Because Dennis told me they come from chickens." Daddy says, "They do. Remember when Uncle Mike took you to the chicken barn and he was catching chickens to put in cages? Yeah, that's where the chicken nuggets come from." She says, "Ew, dead animal. I'm not eating any more chicken." We said, "Okay, fine." And she, to this day, she's 22 years old now. "No, I don't eat meat. No, I don't." She went to Argentina for 6 weeks once. Everybody else was enjoying barbecue, Argentinian style. And the poor hostess had to find something different for my daughter to eat. Now, there are some cultures in the world, Hispanic being one of them, where if you go to somebody's house and they can't give you something that you like to eat, they feel really bad. You know, but it was a decision that she made, not a decision that I said, "You can't." Those are the stronger decisions, rather than something that's made on the spur of the moment. So moral values are in short supply today. Would we agree? Yes? Okay. And they are the most important responsibility of parents. Parents first. But some of you in education know that some parents are not able to do that for whatever reason. I'm not dissing the parents. I'm not blaming the parents. If a parent is working two jobs just to put food on the table and a roof over their heads, yeah, they might not have as much time for this. Or they may not know how to do it. So we as educators need to step in, and we need to reinforce those values at school. Okay, so now we're coming to a time, because you've been sitting for far too long. These are some activities, talking about favorite color, favorite things, favorite Bible verse, how to grow a plant, how to grow a child. We're going to brainstorm some things that we could do to have an active, interactive worship about a value. Today's value is faith in God. How could we have an interactive worship in which children, okay, there are a couple of children in the audience, a few people under the age of 84. Okay, today for devotional, we're going to read from Hiking with Jesus. Now, Hiking with Jesus, by the way, is an excellent devotional book. So you open it up, and you start reading. And what do the children do? Tune out. If they're teenagers, and if they can possibly do it without getting caught, they will be on their phones texting. Okay? Just saying. I have teenagers in my house, too. Oh, wait a minute. No, I don't. He just turned 20. Anyway. Interactive worship. What can we teach about God? What can we use to teach about God, about faith in God, that's interactive? Okay? I'm going to give you a couple of minutes to talk with people at your table. What kinds of things There's a few things on the board. You can't use those. What can you do in a worship to teach about God that's interactive to teach faith in God? You need to have at least two people in order to brainstorm. And kids, you're welcome to tell whoever you're with your ideas too, because they're valuable. We have research people right here within us. Okay, ideas. What do we have? Yes. Using bubbles. What can bubbles teach us about God? Okay, many things. Tell us a little bit.
Just matter.
The states of matter.
Ah, the states of matter. Okay.
Floats.
Okay. Colors change. Okay. So having the faith to believe that the bubble that you blow can change and be a different colors and can do different things. Liquid. Okay. Whatever shape you want. And while you're doing this, do the kids get to play with bubbles at some point in time? What if they're teenagers? Okay. Scented bubbles. All right. What else? What else do we have? What else can teach us about faith in God? Okay. So read a scripture and think of how it applies to life today. Okay. What do we have over here? Okay, asking for student ideas, and the reason I'm repeating this is because Mr. Rouse wants me to, I'm pretty sure. Okay, so asking for their opinion and maybe letting them drive whatever application you're doing, okay? Maybe, here's a thought. Letting them lead out in the worship. Okay? All right? So you have three kids in the family, mom and dad. Each one takes a night. There you go. You got five nights planned. Okay? What else? Okay? Awesome. The next time you're in a church and nobody seems to have the children's story, if you have a Tigger personality, you can pull this off. You go up and you start telling the story of the children of Israel and the Red Sea. And you make all those grown-ups that are sitting out there in the audience stand up and walk across and join hands. And then you lead the children of Israel through the Red Sea. And as you lead them through, the grown-ups have to part and sit back down. And it's great because it gets everybody up and moving, and they're less likely to fall asleep for the pastor. It's great. All right. Do we have anything over here? That's good. Uh-huh. Ever since my daughter learned how to read, it would take us 20, 30 minutes to get to school in the morning. And so we'd jump in the car and I'd hand her the book. I'm driving. I'm not going to read. You read. And then he prays. And then you tell me, what is God telling you through that book? It's harder to be active when you're in a car. It's not impossible. But you can also come up with a lot of different parables. Did you guys come up with anything? That's a good one. That's a good one. And you could go from what was the most important event to what did you think about that? What does that teach us about God? You can awesome. All right, so what are God's values? And then we have a whole list of things that we're not going to stop and look up. But again, as I said at the beginning, there is a Google Drive folder where all of these are going to live that you can find. Okay? God's values are qualities of the soul. They begin inside you. We can't generate these. They come from God. And sometimes when God is teaching us values, the process hurts. Has anybody here ever had a sliver from a piece of wood? Okay? And it hurts, right? But when you go, if somebody goes in to remove that sliver, does that process hurt? Uh-huh. My children always went to Daddy because he was a nurse. They knew who to get help from. If it was homework, it was Mommy. If it was anything health-related, it was Daddy. Carefully choose the values you want to teach your children. The values we're going to talk about this week are faith in God, respect, responsibility, self-control and moderation, honesty and integrity. Some of these are going to be left by the wayside, unfortunately, because we only have 5 days. Peace and humility, loyalty and commitment. But the one I'm going to end with on Friday is peer pressure. How to help peer pressure proof your children. Say that 3 times fast. Okay, Reader's Theater. Part of my education for my master's degree was at La Sierra University, and there was a gentleman out there who was teaching, a professor, Dr. Melvin Campbell. It did not matter what class you took from Dr. Campbell. There would always be 2 things in the class. One was Reader's Theater, and the other was multiple intelligences. Didn't matter what you were studying, he would bring those up. It kind of reminded me of my undergraduate. There was a professor at Andrews when I was way back in the day, Dr. Waterhouse. He could teach Jesus and the Gospels, but you would still learn about the sanctuary. He could be teaching from the Psalms, but you would learn about the sanctuary. Didn't matter what. The topic of the class was, you always learned about the sanctuary in Dr. Waterhouse's class. So, this is a Reader's Theater. How many of you are familiar with Reader's Theaters? A couple of people. Reader's Theaters have a wonderful thing in that it helps people pay attention, and it draws in more activity. So, we have 2 groups here, and I've labeled them Group 1 and Group 2 for lack of originality. And for those of you that are colorblind, I'm sorry, but they're red and green. So It's very simple. Just group one, group two, group one, group two, all the way down until we get to the end. Okay? So let's see. We're not going to divide men and women because that would put the men at an unfair disadvantage because there's fewer of them. So we're gonna divide right down the middle of this table, and you get a choice. You can go one way or the other. And Danny, you can't read from way back there. You got to come closer so you can read. Yes, I want you to be a part of this too. Bring your friend and come on closer. That's the disadvantage of being a student of mine. Okay, so we're going to read this. We'll probably read it through twice because the first time is just a practice run, okay? And I want to get out of the way so you can see it. So this is going to be group one, and this is going to be group two. And then we all come together at the last line down there, all right? So group one, here we go. Group one. Very good. All opportunities for children. Okay, now to just change it up a little bit, we're going to switch parts. We're going to let you guys be group one, and you guys be group two, and we're going to do it one more time. Here we go. Choose quarterbacks for your family from God's word. Be sure that come from God. Reject values. Be sure. Because they choose to live God's values. Focus on values that call each of us soul. Ask God to plant his values in your name. Study divine character. Cultivate friendship with Jesus. Provide many opportunities focus on God's values. All right. So these are some activities, ideas, bulletin board ideas, word search, values search that you can use. The most important value you can pass along to your children is faith in God. It undergirds all the other values, and without it, values lack meaning and substance. Now, I'm going to stop this here for a moment because I just have to show you. This is a very good YouTube clip. About trying to live the good life. Where's my volume? I think it needs this plugged in someplace, yes? All right, now we're going to start again.
Next. File, please. Some lying, some stealing, and some acts of kindness here and there.
I tried to live a good life.
Well, let's see how good. This way. Next. File, please.
Okay, I admit it. I did a lot of bad things.
Yes, I see.
But I've done good things too, you know, to offset the bad things. Like one time I cheated on a test, but then I cleaned up trash in the park.
Mm-hmm.
That should balance out, right?
Let's find out. This way.
That should have balanced out, right? It should have balanced out.
Next. File, please. Impressive.
Oh, yeah. I devoted my entire life to make this world a better place. I dug wells in Africa. I donated blood every month. And I ran an orphanage in India. I mean, I just wish I could have done more.
Mm-hmm. And is this your subscription?
I only read the article. I only read the articles.
Next.
My mom goes to church.
Was baptized as a baby?
Take American Express, right?
Next. File, please. Whoa. Somebody's been busy. Well, let's get this over with. Sorry, I didn't know he was with you. Okay, step on the scale. Not you. Him.
Hey, wait a minute. That is totally not fair. Yeah.
That's why it's called grace. Next.
That's why it's called grace. And that is probably the most perfect representation of grace that I've found on YouTube and in many other areas of life, that it's not about the good that we do. It's about who we know. Okay? So faith in God. If you're doing worship activities with your children or with your students, is it ever appropriate to use media? I think you know the answer, at least in my book. Okay, so, yeah. That's called Good-O-Meter, and you can find it on YouTube the same way I did by Googling it. Now if I can get this to cooperate. Okay, so faith in God is the most important thing to pass along to the children. I know that God will help me when I'm in trouble. I'm confident that he will show me what to do. Can your students say this? Can your children say this? Jesus will forgive anything wrong that I do. He will cover up all my sins with his perfect life. Is it fair? Well, that's why it's called grace. I want Jesus to be my very best friend. I want him to walk with me every day. I want him to hold my hand. What does that look like in your classroom, in your home? I want him to pick me up when I stumble or fall. Jesus gives me the courage to live my convictions, even when it's tough, because he's always with me. I have faith in God. I believe that he died to save me because he loves me. He wants me to be with him always, and I believe what God tells me in his book. Reminds me of a Share Him crusade that I was on one time. If it's in the Bible, I believe it. Only it was in Panama, so it was more like, si está en la Biblia, yo lo creo. God's view of faith. Faith is a gift from God to each person. We can't make up faith on our own. God gives it to us. And it also means believing that God will be with you, even when you can't see what's around the corner in your life. You ask a college graduate, what are you going to do when you get out there? I'm going to get a job. And sometimes that means that you have a degree in music, but the job opening is in Bible and history. Good thing you have a minor. Okay? Or like one of my friends, you have a degree in math, but you don't want to leave this area because you're spouse is still studying at the college, so you go ahead and teach fifth grade even though your degree is in math. So there are corners in our lives that we don't see what's around the corner, but God does, and we trust him with that. Okay, how to help children develop faith, and we're running out of time. We have 10 more minutes. Go back. There are some ways to help children develop faith. And as I said before, we have like three times as much information on these slides as we're going to get to this afternoon. But how do you do that? How do you design the atmosphere of your home or your classroom to lead toward God? Yes. 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 Okay, so how do we do that? It says, share your joy in the Lord. How do we do that? Be joyful. Okay, so it's a snowy day, and there's a two-hour delay, but teachers have to get there anyway because you got to get there before the kids do, and you had problems getting your car started because you didn't have a garage to park it in, and now it's very cold and the motor doesn't want to turn over, and so you've got to heat it up, and then so you're running late, and you know you're going to get to school about 10 minutes before the kids do. And so you get there, and you have to shovel the walk, and you have to get all of this stuff done before they get there, and then how does that affect your joy in the Lord? What does that show to the students? Okay, thank God daily. Record the joys God has given your family or your classroom. Pray for your children and with your children every day. Danny's gone, so good, I can talk about him. One of the things that I really appreciate about my advisee, Danny, is that every time he comes to my office to get help, if I don't remember, he always does. And he always says, let's pray, Professor Laughlin. And he grabs my hand and he prays for me. Or sometimes I pray for him. It just depends on, you know. But praying together is huge. Praying for your children and with your children. Pray many short prayers during the day. Maybe you live in an area where there's city streets, a siren goes by. Do you pray for the ambulance? Do you stop English? Okay, we can do conjugation of verbs later, and we're just going to have prayer for these people. Okay, pray about decisions, wrongdoing, special events, temptations, friendships. Pray for others. Ask the Holy Spirit to be with your children all the time. Family worship. Your schoolroom is like a family too, you know. Choose a time when everyone can be relaxed. Use a modern version so the children can understand. Explain difficult phrases. Select short passages with meaning that will be a guide. Don't use God's word as a hammer over their heads. Let the children, don't always tell them what the verse means. Ask them. I did this when I was teaching in East Los Angeles. Whenever I'm working a crowd of teachers like this, and I say, I taught 7th and 8th grade in East Los Angeles. It's wonderful. I get instant respect. It was a wonderful time. But I had a calendar that had a Bible verse, just the text, written on it. And so every morning when I first came in, I would write the text in big letters on the board. And then their job, when they came in, they grabbed their journal and they copied the text down. And then they opened their Bibles and they wrote the verse down. And then they had to tell me what they thought it meant. that gave me time to do attendance and lunch count and all kinds of interesting things. But it was the start to our worship talk. And then I would ask some of them to read what they had written. And then I would expound a little bit, and before you knew it, we'd have a whole sermon going there. Trust the Holy Spirit to speak to your child. Share your personal faith experience with your children. Have you ever done this, parents and teachers? Talk to the children about, you know, I really had a hard time. It was interesting because the school population in East LA, when I taught there a long time ago, was 80% Latino, and we had a lot of people from various backgrounds. We had hospital children, hospital workers' children. We had welfare mothers who would put their children in our school because we had the lowest Adventist tuition in the whole conference, and we made it possible because we stuffed our classrooms full of children. I had 33 one year in grades 2 and 3. Anyway, so this one student came running into the classroom one day after school. He was 7th or 8th grade, and he said to my friend that was team teaching with me, he said, Mrs. Staubach, what does bastard mean? And she said, she looks at me, and she looked at him, and I said, I got this one. I said, well, Jose, bastard means your mom and dad weren't married when you were born. But don't worry about it. It happens to the best of us. And I said, it happened to me too. And he went out of there with well, I guess I am, but I'm not. You know, that kind of thing. And later, when those same kids were in my classroom, one day I came back to school from a vacation, and I said, well, I finally met my biological dad. And one of the students came up to me after I had shared that in worship that morning about meeting him, and he said, Mrs. Laughlin, you need to forgive him because he's your dad. And I'm like, whoa, preach it. Yeah, ouch, you know. But when you open up and share things with the students, you know, had a really bad day, was having a hard time praising the Lord, they get that. And then it becomes something real, not just something out of a book. Yeah, we know Daniel had a bad day. He was in the lion's den. But if you're driving out in the Smoky Mountains National Park and you have car trouble and you're 20 miles from the nearest gas station and you're having a bad day and God sees you through that, if you can talk about things with your kids, it becomes real. And I want to, you don't have to share with them all the personal details of your life, but at least show them that God is taking care of you just as you believe he will take care of them. Be open. Okay. I think I'm running close. I want to challenge a couple of people, brave people. I won't pick on anybody who doesn't want to be picked on. Oh, I take that back. I might pick on somebody. I want you to take about 30 seconds and think, what was the most important point out of my rambling today? What was the one most important point? You're welcome to write it down if you wish. What was the most important point today? And then in a couple of minutes, I'm going to ask you also to think about what was the least clear. What was the point where you said, well, you started to say something and then I didn't really get what you... Okay, so the most important point and what was the least clear. Okay? Think about that. Write it down if you want. How many of you have smartphones or tablets or something with you? A couple people? Good. Okay. Now, if you want to share verbally what the most important point was, or if you are an Eeyore or a Piglet and you don't want to talk, if you go to, on your smartphone, if you go to padlet.com/Laughlin/values, padlet.com/Laughlin/values, you'll get to this page and you can type your answer instead of speaking it. Most important point today, who wants to volunteer? Most important point. So reiterating with your students, with your children, with others, grandchildren, okay? Yeah, don't leave out the grands. Yes. Values make God real. I like that. Good, good. Somebody else? Yes. Ah, intentionality. Intentional effort. You don't just catch it like you catch a common cold. Okay? Intentional effort, okay? All right? Yes. Yes. And when I was his age, I wouldn't have shared that with anybody. But over the course of my life, I had come to the place where that wasn't about me. I didn't have a choice. He didn't either. So I wanted him to understand that just because of the circumstances of your birth doesn't make a final destination for your life. Okay? So if you go to this page, padlet.com/Laughlin/values, you can add your own words of wisdom from today, summarizing. And you also see on this Padlet, there's the Google Drive folder, and that has the PowerPoint with the other two-thirds of the information. Just look for the workshop day one. Yes, I am. Well, and because Google has this random set of letters, that's why I put it up on Padlet, because Padlet, I can make the URL something that makes sense so that then you can find the Google off of that. Okay. Any questions? Anything that wasn't clear? I tend to ramble when I teach, and I know that. And so I have created the PowerPoint to fill in the gaps for all of you who are very structured and linear thinkers. Yes. Not in this workshop. That would be for another, like teachers' convention or something. I don't know. There's personalities is a good one. There's another workshop that I did at Fletcher that talked about Generation Z and the kids that are coming up and what their personalities are like. So yeah, I have several more that could be done, but I had to pick one for this week, and it's short, so. Uh-huh. Yes. Yes. Yes, and if you always make homogeneous groups that, like, all of the best readers are in this one and all of the worst readers are in that one, typically those groups stay with them. You know, if you're a bluebird in first grade, you're going to be a bluebird in high school. You know, because who are your reading models that you hear? Other kids that are struggling to read. Okay. So there's a time for homogeneous grouping, and there's a time for heterogeneous grouping, where different people have different strengths, like in a cooperative learning group, where one person is the one who's in front of the movie camera, and somebody else is writing the script, and somebody else is holding the camera and editing it, so that people can use their strengths. Think about it. When you go out in the workforce, you get a job in something that you're good at. Yes. And so you want to stretch them, but their entire assignment or grade doesn't always have to hinge on their weakest area. You do want the oral person to learn how to write, even if they have to use dragon speak to do it. Okay? You want them to understand, hey, the squiggly marks that are red on the computer screen, there's a reason for that. Maybe you should check it out. Okay? But at the end of the day, I still have an accountant that does my income tax, and I have a mechanic that fixes my car, and I don't try to do either one of those things. So yes, they need to learn. It's like I'm hampered here, but we'll try. It's like a target, you know, one of those goal things. You decide what are like the no-brainers, like this everybody has to learn. This much, it would be good for them to learn. This much, only some children are going to learn that. Not everybody will. But there has to be, you know, the essential question or the main objective of their learning, and everybody has to be able to do that. Everybody should know by the time they're in college that you begin a sentence with a capital and you end it with a period. There are a few other things they should know as well, but I won't get into that. Anyone else? Thank you all for your attention. I know my band boys are getting ready to get up here and fix the screen and do all of their things for the young adult meeting tonight. I'll be here as long as there's anybody to talk to.